This is a set of selected talks and meditations by Rudolf Steiner called Staying Connected, a compiled list, subtitled How to Continue Your Relationships with Those Who Have Died. It is edited and introduced by Christopher Bamford. The selected talks take place between 1905 and 1924. I will only be reading the lectures and not the introductions. Part 1 is overviewed. The overall title of Part 1 is called Entry. I'll read the small intro before each of the lectures. To communicate with the dead, we need a common language, a living language, not a dead language of old thoughts, unconscious habits, and mechanical emotions. Thoughts sent to the dead must be in a language they can understand. What we think must have meaning for them. Thus it must have meaning for us too. To communicate with the dead, therefore, requires freshness, spontaneity, creative intention, and truly felt feelings. The first approach to this must include the understanding that the language must be, quotes, spiritual, not, quotes, material. The dead cannot understand dead materialistic thoughts, but only living spiritual thoughts. Spiritual thoughts are those that we make our own. First, we think them afresh and try to raise them to their highest meaning for us. Then, emptying ourselves, we offer that experience to the spiritual world. Once thoughts can become a living reality for us, in this way, they are able to cross the abyss between the living and the dead. The dead can share in such thoughts and learn from them. They can even act within them and take them further. In fact, without such thoughts, we are not present for our loved ones who have died. They look in vain for us. They depend upon us, but cannot find us. More than that, they are constrained, even fettered by our absence. We do not provide a medium within which they can live and continue to participate in the earthly stream that is their karma. When our souls are filled with materialistic thinking, we are like a void to them, nothing. Nowadays, many souls are cut off in this way. Therefore, spiritual reading, what is called lectio divina, the meditative reading of spiritual literature to the dead, can be a great comfort to them. At the same time, through this process and through the process of living, thinking, and living, feeling, the dead can also communicate with us. After all, they continue to care and still have a great deal to offer. To establish relationships with the dead, however, requires effort. This effort is part of the greater work of overcoming materialism and spiritualizing human life on earth. Since this work is an aspect of cosmic evolution as a whole, it involves the entire spiritual world and all the beings in it. Lecture, Overcoming the Abyss, given in Stuttgart on February 20th, 1913 by Rudolf Steiner. Here on earth, by means of our souls and bodies, we have the most varied kinds of relationships with the physical world, as well as with the spiritual world that underlies it. Likewise, between death and a new birth, we exist in relationship with the facts, happenings, and beings of a supersensory world. Human beings have an occupation or activity in the physical world between birth and death. Likewise, they have activities, occupations, as it were, between death and a new birth. What we can learn about human life and human activity between death and a new birth will lead humanity more and more toward what we may call the overcoming of the abyss, in quotes. That, especially in our materialistic times, separates those who live on earth from those whom we call the dead. In this process, communication and a mutual entering into relationship will increasingly come to be established between the living and the dead. Today I want to highlight the details of such relationships between the living and the dead, and speak about how souls live and work in the period between death and a new birth. Naturally, those who die before others with whom they had relationships on earth often gaze back from the spiritual world at those they loved who remain here. This being the case, we may ask whether such souls living between death and a new birth can perceive human beings who live here on earth between birth and death. Anyone who develops the faculties that enable a person to become a seer and to penetrate the life between death and a new birth, can have very special, even deeply moving experiences. For instance, such seers may find souls among the dead who sometimes say something like the following, parenthesis, of course they say it in a language comprehensible only by one who can look from our world into the world of the dead, parenthesis. A soul who was last incarnated in a male body, for example, was able to express itself to a seer after death in this way. Quote, all my thoughts and memories go back to that person who was my faithful wife. When I was below in earthly life, she was the sunshine of my life. When my business for the day was finished and I came home in the evening, my soul was refreshed by what she was able to be for me and by what then entered my soul from hers. Truly, she was spiritual food for me. The longing for her has stayed with me. Now my spiritual eye is directed toward the earth, but I cannot find her. She is not there. From all that I have learned, I know that this soul, my wife, must be on earth in a physical body as she was before, but for me it is as though she is extinguished and not there. Unquote. Seers can often have this kind of heart-wrenching experience with souls who feel fettered when they think of those they left behind. Such souls feel that they cannot get through, cannot look down on those earthly souls. They are fettered not by their own essential being, but by the other souls left behind. Investigation into why a soul in the spiritual world cannot perceive souls who remain on earth reveals that because of the circumstances of our time, those souls who have remained on earth have been unable to take in or allow any thoughts to live in them that might otherwise become visible and perceptible to a soul who has passed through the gate of death. In other words, souls who have gone through the gate of death and long for the sight of those left behind sense their existence on the physical plane, but they cannot announce themselves to them. Just as mutes cannot announce themselves through language, earthly souls also remain mute for the disembodied souls who long for them. In other words, souls left behind remain inaudible in their spiritual nature to the one who has already passed through the gate of death. There is a great difference among souls here on earth, depending on their makeup. Imagine a soul living here in the physical body, who between awaking and going to sleep is concerned only with thoughts taken from the material world. Such a soul filled entirely with thoughts, concepts, ideas, and sensations taken solely from the material world cannot be perceived at all from the other world. No trace of it can be seen. But a soul filled with spiritual ideas, such as those provided by spiritual science, a soul glowing and illuminated by spiritual ideas is perceptible from the other world. Consequently, no matter how good they may be as human beings, the souls left behind who are immersed in materialism are not real to the world beyond and cannot be perceived. This makes a shocking, terrible impression upon the seer, despite the detachment such souls have attained. It is especially true these days when it seems as if every contact were cut off between souls who are often so closely linked here on earth, that one can have countless experiences of this kind in relation to the world beyond. Nevertheless, one can always find souls who live in that world. They have gone through the gate of death and now look down on those who have spiritual thoughts, even if only occasionally. If human beings on earth allow spiritual thoughts to permeate their souls, those thoughts can be perceived by souls in the beyond, and those earthly souls remain real for them. What we are touching upon here is the fact that the spiritual thoughts nurtured by souls here on earth can not only be perceived but be understood by the souls beyond. And, even more significantly, this fact can have a practical consequence. Building on this insight, we can do something that could become very significant for the relationship between souls here and souls beyond. I refer to what we may call, quote, reading to the dead, unquote. Reading to the dead is often extraordinarily important. Again, a seer can have the experience that human beings who have entirely disregarded spiritual wisdom have a strong longing for it and wish to hear about it after they have passed through the gate of death. If souls who have remained behind make a clear mental image of the dead person and at the same time bring to mind a spiritual train of thought or read from a spiritual book, in thought, not aloud, then the dead person whose spiritual image stands before them will become aware of it. We have experienced in our spiritual movement the most excellent results when those still living have read to their departed relatives. One can often see how the dead long to hear what gets through to them from here. To enter into a relationship with a soul, it is especially important to remember one thing during the time immediately following death. One cannot establish a relationship with a supersensory being without doing something. There is often much deception and illusion about this. It is not as easy as it seems. It is a grave error to think that a human being merely needs to die in order to contact the whole spiritual world. I met a person once who was not really very intelligent, but nevertheless spoke incessantly about Kant, Schopenhauer, and so on. He even gave lectures on Kant and Schopenhauer. When I lectured about the nature of immortality, he answered me rather smugly, saying, quote, "Here on earth we cannot know anything about immortality, since we do not experience it until we die," unquote. It might be said that given his present capacities, after death this person will not differ very much from what he is now in his soul. Indeed, it is a deep misconception to believe that souls become wise as soon as they pass through the gate of death. A soul cannot be easily instructed by souls in the beyond immediately on passing through the gate of death if there is no basis for a connection with them. Furthermore, as I have said, it is not so easy to establish connections with human beings after death if we have not already been connected before death. On the other hand, connections that have been established here are effective for a long time. But a departed human being does have connections with people on earth. And in the afterlife, those people can bring that soul the food it is starving for. They can bring spiritual wisdom by reading to the dead, thereby bringing about immensely valuable effects. The dead would not be helped if we read them external materialistic science, chemistry or physics, for instance. That is a language they do not understand, because these sciences are useful only for life on earth. But what is said about the spiritual worlds in the language of spiritual science remains understandable to the dead. However, one thing must be taken into consideration during the time immediately following death. During the period immediately following death, souls retain an understanding for things communicated to them in the languages they spoke here on earth. The dead become independent of language only after a certain time. Then one may read to them in any language, and they will understand the thought content. A departed person who has spoken only one language will surely be more connected immediately following death with the language last spoken. We should really consider that during the time immediately following death we have to send our thoughts to the dead. We must send our thoughts to them in the language they were accustomed to. Here we come to a point that can teach us how the abyss may be bridged by the fact that spiritual science flows into our spiritual life in this world and in the other world, the world we live in between death and a new birth. While materialism permits us to bring to life only relationships between souls confined to their earthly existence, spiritual science opens the way for free communication and exchange between souls on the earth and souls that dwell beyond the earth in the other world. The dead will live with us, and when that happens, what we may call the passage through the gate of death will often, after a time, be experienced as merely a change in the form of existence. The whole transformation in the life of spirit and of soul that will take place when such things become common knowledge will be of enormous significance. We have just dealt with one example, reading to the dead, of the effect of the living on the dead. We may likewise begin to understand the way in which the dead in their turn affect the living. Several times I've ventured to mention, please excuse the personal reference, that in the past I taught many children. I had to teach several children in a family in which only the mother was alive, and I felt it to be my task, this must be the task of any educator, to discover the potentialities and talents of the children in order to guide and instruct them as their educator. Something about these children remained incomprehensible to me. No matter what was tried, they showed a certain behavior that was a consequence neither of their inherent qualities nor of their surroundings. One could not quite manage them. In such cases, one must call on everything for help. My spiritual research produced the following. The father had died, as I said, and he did not agree with how the children were being treated by the relatives, nor with what happened within the intimate family circle. And because of special circumstances, his influence had an effect on the children. I did not know what to do until the moment when I considered that there was something special at work that derived neither from potentialities nor from surroundings, but came out of the supra-sensory world from the departed father, who directed his forces into the souls of his children. I had to consider what the father really wanted. I succeeded in my task as soon as I investigated the will of the father, who had passed through the gate of death, and considered him as a real person, like the other persons in physical existence who had their joint effects on the children. In this case, it was clearly shown to me that spiritual knowledge can indicate to us the effect that forces from the supra-sensory spiritual world have on this physical world. But to perceive such a thing, one needs the right moment. One must try, for instance, to develop a kind of force that makes it possible to perceive, as it were, the raying in of the suprasensory force, in this case that of the father, into the souls of the children. This is often difficult. It might be easy, for instance, to try to recognize how the dead father wants to implant this or that thought into the children's souls. But that often proves incorrect, and above all, the experience cannot always be repeated. It helps to obtain a picture that gives the father's form, the way he looked at the last, and meditate on it. Or, if you have access to it, a distinct picture of his handwriting may be held in memory and kept before the mind's eye. By such means we can prepare ourselves for the kind of teaching I am talking of here. By concentrating on handwriting or a picture, we take into our own work the dead person's views, intentions, and aims. The time will come when we are going to have to take into account what the dead want for those left behind. Today we can only take into account the will of those who are on the physical plane, but in the future there will be a mutual, one might say, a free exchange between the living and the dead. We shall learn to investigate what the dead want for the physical plane. Just imagine the great upheaval in the external factors of physical life when the dead play a part and have an effect on the physical plane through the living. Spiritual science, if it is rightly understood, and it must always be rightly understood, will then not be a mere theory. Spiritual science will become more and more an elixir of life, pervading all existence, transforming it the more it spreads. And it will certainly accomplish this, for its effects will not be those of an abstract ideal that is preached or sold by societies. On the contrary, spiritual science will slowly but surely take hold of souls on earth and transform them. Our understanding will be enriched in many other respects as well. We will live together with the dead in quite another way, because we will understand what the dead are doing. Many things about the relationships between the world here on earth, the physical plane, and the world we experience between death and a new birth remain quite incomprehensible today. Much that happens here in the physical world remains incomprehensible. Since everything that happens here corresponds to what happens there, the relation of the physical world and humanity to the supra-sensory world remains incomprehensible. But if spiritual science is rightly understood, comprehension will increasingly take the place of non-comprehension. For instance, relationships will be established that show what strangely devious ways are taken by the beings who, as it were, carry out the further development of world wisdom. These beings take strangely devious ways, but nevertheless, if we follow them, they show themselves to be full of wisdom in every respect. Let us consider various conditions. First, let us consider souls whom the eye of the seer may perceive in their work between death and a new birth. There we see many souls. Again, this is something that deeply affects the seer, who are condemned for a certain time between death and a new birth to be the slaves of the spirits who send sickness and death into physical life. We see souls who between death and a new birth are under the dominion of beings we call the Aramanic spirits, or the spirits of hindrance, those who bring obstacles or hindrances into life. It is a hard fate, indeed, that the seer observes in some souls who have to submit to the yoke of slavery in this way. If one traces such souls back to the life they led before they passed through the gate of death, one finds that souls who must serve the spirits of resistance for a certain time after death prepared themselves for this by self-indulgence during life on earth, while the slaves of the spirits of sickness and death prepared this fate for themselves by having been unscrupulous before death. So we see a certain relation of human souls to the evil spirits of sickness and death and to the evil spirits of resistance. Let us now look more closely at the souls here on earth who are subjected to what such souls must do, that is, visit sickness and death upon us, and work hindrances into our lives. Let us look at the souls who perish here on earth in the flower of their youth without reaching the death of old age. Let us look upon the souls here on earth who are subjected to sickness, who are pursued by misfortune, as obstacle upon obstacle arises before them. What does the seer observe when considering souls who die early or are pursued by misfortune and then pass into the spiritual world? What does the seer notice about such souls? One may have strange experiences concerning human destinies on earth. We shall point to one example, to one very moving destiny on earth, which in a certain way is paradigmatic. A little child is born. The mother dies at her birth. The child is motherless. The father, on the day the child is born, learns that his whole fortune, which was tied up in a ship on the high seas, is lost. The ship has been wrecked. Because of this, he becomes melancholic. Then he too dies, leaving the child completely orphaned. The little girl is adopted by a wealthy woman who is very fond of the child and wills a large fortune to her. The woman then dies while the child is still comparatively young. but when the will is probated, a technical error is found. The child does not get a penny of what was willed to her. For the second time, she is cast out into the world penniless and must hire out as a servant, do menial work. She meets a man who falls in love with her, but they cannot be united because of the prejudices governing the community. They belong to different denominations. But the man loves her so much that he promises to adopt her faith as soon as his father, already very old, dies. The man goes abroad. There he learns that his father has fallen ill. His father dies. The man adopts the girl's faith. He speeds back to her. But as he is returning, she falls ill and dies. When he arrives, she is dead. He feels the deepest pain and will not be satisfied until the grave is opened so that he can see her once more. And from the position of the corpse, it can be seen that the girl was buried alive. This is a legend. Robert Hämmerling, the Austrian poet, retold it. Footnote, pseudonym of Rupert Hämmerling, 1830-1889, Austrian poet best known for his epics Ahasverus in Rome, 1865, and Homunculus, 1889. End of footnote. It is a legend, not reality, but it might occur in innumerable instances. We see a human soul who does not merely perish in the flower of her youth, but in a certain way is pursued by misfortune from the beginning of her life. Such conditions are worked out through the cooperation of those souls who, on account of unscrupulousness, become the servants of the evil spirits of sickness, death, and misfortune. In other words, unscrupulous souls are active in the preparation of such hard fates. To the seer, this is especially evident in such happenings as, for instance, the catastrophe of the Titanic. There we may investigate the effect of the souls who, for lack of conscience, have become the servants of the spirits of sickness and misfortune. Karma must be carried out, and these things are necessary. But it is an evil fate that engulfs the souls who after death are bowed down under such a yoke of slavery. But let us ask further. What about the souls who suffer such a fate here on earth, who perish in the flower of their youth, who are destroyed early by epidemics? What about these souls when they pass through the gate of death into the spiritual world before their time? We learn the fate of these souls when we penetrate with the eye of the seer into the work of the spirits, who give a forward impulse to the evolution of the earth, or, indeed, to all evolution. These spirits are beings of the higher hierarchies. They have certain forces, certain powers to advance evolutionary development, but they are limited in a certain way with regard to these forces and powers. Thus we notice the following. Completely materialistic souls who lose all sense of the suprasensory world are in fact already threatened today by a kind of blight, kind of cutting off from progressive development. Already in our time, in a certain way, the danger exists that a large portion of humanity may not be able to keep up with evolution because they are, so to speak, bound to the earth by the heaviness of their own souls. Because their souls are completely materialistic, they may not be taken along for the next incarnation. This danger is to be deflected according to the decision of the higher hierarchies. The truth is that the decisive hour for the souls who, having cut themselves off completely, are not to be carried along with evolution does not come until the sixth period, actually not until the Venus stage of evolution. Souls must not fall prey to the downward pull of gravity to the extent that they are compelled to remain behind. The higher hierarchies have actually decided that this must not happen. But these beings of the higher hierarchies are in a certain way limited in their forces and capabilities. Nothing is unlimited, even among the beings of the higher hierarchies. If it were only a question of the forces of these higher hierarchies, then completely materialistic souls would, through themselves, already in a certain way have to be cut off from progressive evolution. The beings of the higher hierarchies already cannot save these souls by themselves, so an expedient is used. Those who die on earth who die an early death have, as souls, a possibility before them. Let us say they have died through some catastrophe, for instance, they are run over by an express train. The bodily sheath is taken from such a soul. The soul is now free from its body, denuded of its body, but it still contains the forces that would have been active in the body here on earth. By going into the spiritual world, such souls carry up with them very special forces, forces that would still have been effective here on earth, but that have been prematurely diverted. Those who die early carry with them forces that are especially helpful. The beings of the higher hierarchies then use these forces to save the souls whom they cannot save by their own power, which is only sufficient for the regular course of human evolution. Souls that are materialistically inclined are thus led away to better times and saved. Salvation is achieved because the beings of the higher hierarchies experience increased strength through the unused forces that come from the earth and still have available energy. These forces accrue to the beings of the higher hierarchies. Thus the souls who perish early help their fellows who otherwise would be submerged in the morass of materialism. This is what those souls who depart early must do. What a strange interdependence exists in the complicated ways of cosmic wisdom. Cosmic wisdom permits the sentencing of human souls for lack of conscience to cooperate in bringing sickness and early death into the world. But then the souls who suffer sickness and early death are used by the good beings of the higher hierarchies to help other souls. Thus things that seem evil outwardly in Maya are often transformed into good, but in complicated ways. The ways wisdom takes in the world are very complicated. Only gradually do we learn to find our way in these paths of wisdom. One might say that up above the spirits of the higher hierarchies sit in council. Because human beings must be free, they are given the possibility of plunging into materialism, into evil. The hierarchies give them so much freedom that some human souls, so to speak, escape from them, souls who could not by their own strength carry on up to a certain point of time. Such souls need other souls who develop forces on earth that retain their inner potential because of being prematurely separated from the body when the latter souls have to return to the spiritual world because of accident and early death. This early death is brought about by the agency of human souls who in pursuit of their freedom have fallen into unscrupulousness. A wonderful cyclic path is opened up here, a cyclic path of cosmic wisdom, we may say. We should not believe at all that the so-called simple things are the universal ones. The world has become complicated. Nietzsche's saying, which was revealed to him as though by inspiration, is truly significant, quote, "The world is deep and deeper than the day had thought," unquote. Those who believe that everything can be grasped by the day wisdom of the intellect are completely wrong. For the higher spiritual light does not shine into the wisdom of the day, but shines into the darkness. We must seek this light in order to find our way in the darkness, where, nevertheless, cosmic wisdom is at work. If we accept such concepts, we may contemplate the world with different eyes from before, and it will become increasingly necessary to learn to contemplate the world with new eyes, for humanity has lost much since ancient times. To understand what we have lost, consider this. During the third post-Atlantean period, the Egypto-Chaldean, there were intermediate states between sleeping and waking. In those states, souls looked up into the world of the stars and saw not just physical stars as we do today, but the spiritual beings of the higher hierarchies. They observed the guiding and directing forces of the destiny and movement of the stars, and what existed from immemorial times in the form of old stellar maps with all kinds of drawings of group souls that looked like animals without being animals was not born out of fantasy but was spiritually perceived. Souls perceived this in the realm of the spirit, and they were able to carry the spiritual element to the gate of death. The soul has now lost this vision of the suprasensory world. When souls are born today, they confront the physical world with the bodily sense organs and see nothing but the external physical world. They no longer see what surrounds the external physical world as the world of spirit and soul, the world of the higher hierarchies, and so forth. But what is the nature of the souls who appear in today's bodies? All the souls of those here now were incarnated in former times. The great majority were incarnated in Egypto-Chaldaic bodies, and through them looked out into a world they saw with spiritual as well as with physical perception. They took this spiritual experience into themselves. It exists in them today. Not in all souls. Yet the souls who today no longer see anything but physical facts once lived in contemplation of the spiritual world, lived a life completely perceptive of the spiritual world. How do these souls live now? They live exactly as though they had totally forgotten the spiritual world. They have forgotten the spiritual perceptions they once absorbed. But what we have forgotten is forgotten merely for our present consciousness. It still exists in the deepest recesses of our souls. Thus this peculiar situation exists. Souls living today have around them consciously nothing but a physical sensory image of the world. But in their inner being, perceptions they once received as true spiritual vision still live unconsciously in the depths of their souls. They know nothing of these perceptions, which manifest only as peculiar conceptions that burrow in the depths of the soul, but do not rise into consciousness. These conceptions have a paralyzing, deadening effect. And thus something actually arises in the human beings of today that exists in them as a deadening element. If one contemplates human beings today as a seer, contemplates them anatomically, One finds, especially in the nervous system, certain currents, certain forces that are forces of death, stemming from conceptions that were alive in former incarnations. The spiritual ideas that human beings have now forgotten have a consuming quality. Indeed, if there were not something present that counteracts it, this consuming quality would show itself more and more as humanity moves further into the future. What could avert this? Nothing but the bringing up into consciousness of what was forgotten. One must remind souls of what they have forgotten. That is what spiritual science does. Fundamentally, it does nothing but remind the souls of ideas they have absorbed. Spiritual science lifts these conceptions into consciousness. In this way, it provides the possibility of enlivening what would otherwise be like a dead impulse in life. Please note two things you have heard in the course of these reflections. On the one hand, the seer perceives human souls who have passed through the gate of death and long for the souls left behind, who cannot be perceived, because although they may perhaps belong to quite good people, they contain only materialistic images of the world. Though the seer may have achieved calmness of soul, it is deeply moving to perceive these starving souls. On the other hand, the seer looks into a future in which humanity will contain more and more dead matter, which will kill it if people do not raise into consciousness and revivify the ideas they once received. If humanity does not do this, the seer would have to look into a future in which people, through all kinds of hereditary traits, would show signs of old age much earlier than is the case today. Just as today one may see examples of infantile old age, even senility, so then would people show, soon after birth, wrinkles and other indications of old age, if, through lack of spiritual knowledge, forces do not appear that are memories of conceptions once received in a natural way. The seer is conscious of this, and searches for a language that will provide the dying human race with a life-giving elixir. And will give the dead possibilities of coming into and will give the dead possibilities of coming into contact with the relatives they have left behind on earth. Such a language would be understood and spoken both by souls living on earth between birth and death, and by those living beyond, between death and a new birth, a language common to the living and the dead. The end of this lecture.